Welcome back to another episode of the Real Talk on Women's Health Podcast with Essentia Health. I am incredibly excited about my guest and this topic. First and foremost, welcome Erin Monahan, a physician assistant at Essentia Health. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So we're talking about one of my favorite topics, which is skincare, and we're talking about skincare for women as we age. So I guess let's just dive right in and talk about the changes, unfortunately, that occur in women's skin as they age. Because in my 20s, I mean, I don't think I was drinking water. I was wearing sunscreen, but now that I'm in my 30s now, I do notice my skin changing. So can you kind of take us through, I guess, the years as we age?
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, like, good job on using the sunscreen, because I find still, even though we have all of this incredible data showing that sunscreen is very, very important and we should be avoiding the ultraviolet radiation from the sun as much as possible, people still don't wear it. And I have plenty of patients, you know, that are in their 70s and 80s, where when they were teens or in their 20s, the standard was you go out and you use baby oil and you get your tan for the summer and you're quote unquote protected. We know a lot more now. And unfortunately, the 70, 80 year olds, those are the ones that we're finding skin cancers on. So kudos to you for already wearing sunscreen. Love that.
Well, I was ahead of the curve on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. It's perfectly normal. All of these changes that start to happen as we age, and it should be considered kind of a graceful thing as we get older. I try really hard to not blame things on aging. When I'm speaking to my patients, I've come up with cutesy little ways of being like, oh, it's not because you're getting older, because they'll ask. I'll say, it's because you've had enough birthdays. Typically, as we age, part of the normal body process is that our skin starts to lose elasticity. And so that's what provides the sort of supple look, the firmness, the bounce back of our skin that we so took for granted when we were teenagers. So things start to sag. We start to develop fine lines. If we've had enough sun exposure or ultraviolet exposure in our lifetime, we'll start developing like dark spots. And really all of that is pretty normal, but there are plenty of things to do to help kind of prevent it or even treat it when it starts happening. We want to look at it as this is a natural process, but if it bothers you, there are things that we can do, kind of a thing.
So like I said, you know, my 20s, I was wearing sunscreen and I was ahead of the curve there, but we could all be probably better with our skincare routine.
For sure.
So for me, I guess maybe this is a personal question I just want an answer to, but is it like too late, you know, for those that don't wear sunscreen or maybe like, you know, that don't wash their makeup off at night or don't moisturize? Like, is there a way to turn it around in your 30s and your 40s as you're aging?
Yes, absolutely. So when we are dealing with like sun damage in particular, we know that it's a cumulative process. So what has already occurred, there's not necessarily much to do about, okay, well, you can't turn back time, but there are methods we can do to help reduce the amount of damage. So it's never too late, even though you've had sun. Maybe you used tanning beds. You're going to make good choices as an adult now, and you're going to avoid the things that we know are problematic for the skin. And we're going to start being real diligent with the sunscreen and making good choices. So we're not sort of adding interest to the savings account of sun damage that we already got as kids and teens. So it's never too late. And you know, you mentioned about like not taking makeup off at the end of the evening. That's not so much damaging to the skin other than it can lead to clogging pores and then you can have breakouts. And just naturally, most people aren't going to like that. And when you start doing a better job of removing the day, maybe it's not even makeup, but just kind of like the dead skin cells, the oil, maybe the environmental factors like smog in the air, removing that before your head hits the pillow is a really good idea. And you should just start whenever you have the mental fortitude to do so.
Yeah, just make a habit of it.
Just make a habit of it.
So now that we're kind of on the topic of anti-aging and all that, what are some anti-aging treatments or procedures available for women?
So I like to start talking about just over-the-counter topicals that people can access, because those are going to be significantly less expensive than some procedures. So there are a number of topical products like retinols or vitamin C, hyaluronic acid, that have a lot of benefit for reducing fine lines, reducing wrinkles, improving elasticity of the skin, reducing dark spots. And you can find products that are in the $10 to $20 range, or, you know, you can go fancy dancy and get stuff that's $90. But I'm not in the habit of recommending the expensive stuff. I want people to be able to get things that are at like Walmart and Target or, you know, off Amazon. I want it to be accessible. So those are going to be your sort of baseline treatments for anti-aging or even to address the signs of aging if they are present. Then we've got more aggressive options. You can look at things like Botox and fillers. Those are going to help basically bring firmness back to the skin, bring volume back to the skin. Botox paralyzes muscles so that you're not seeing the wrinkles and the fine lines. So those are going to be injectable options, or what we call cosmeceuticals. And then we've got procedures. People can have laser peels, chemical peels. They can have things like microdermabrasion or microneedling. Those are typically done by trained estheticians, and they would probably have more information about what exactly a person's skin needs based on their concerns. But there's lots of different peels and aggressive treatments. That's going to be more expensive.
Right. I like that you said you want it to be affordable, because I know there's so many things on the market that are $100 or whatever. And then in my mind, I'm like, well, those must work better. But really, I feel like, you know, if you're saying that the less expensive ones work just as well, that's good news. And maybe we'll motivate some people to do some of these anti-aging treatments.
Oh, yeah. And I really try hard to give people a couple of visual references. So I'll pull up on Google, like, I like this product from this brand. Because when you go to, say, Target or Walmart, and you go and stand in the aisle, and you're just, oh my God, there's so many serums and moisturizers, and I don't know about this brand. This looks cool. The packaging is neat, but where do I go? I try and give people a really good reference point so they don't have that overwhelming, oh, there's too much to choose from. Where do I start? And we just kind of talk about active ingredients and products that I know and I like and I trust and that aren't crazy expensive.
So what are some of those products or ingredients that we should be looking for? Because I am like a skincare, not guru, because I don't know much. I always am buying new skincare. So what are some of those?
I like that because I have that same compulsion to just kind of try all the new stuff.
Right.
Especially in the age of like Instagram and TikTok and mm-hmm. YouTube, we're just being bombarded by all these different products. And oh my gosh, well, it worked good for her, so let's give that a try. And then we end up with a closet full of products. So my general recommendation is we want to keep things really, really simple for just basic skincare. So gentle cleanser that's fragrance-free and doesn't have any physical exfoliants like the gritty stuff. We don't like grit. And then we want a good moisturizer, preferably with SPF in it, or moisturizer and then an SPF. So those are like the baseline products that should be in really anyone's repertoire. And then, you know, I make product recommendations, especially when it comes to active ingredients like retinol or like vitamin C or hyaluronic acid. I make those product recommendations based on the patient's concerns. I don't like to just look at a patient and be like, well, this is what's wrong with your skin and this is what we need to do about it, because I'm not interested in giving people a complex or a new self-conscious trait.
And we already know, you know, looking in the mirror, yeah. We already know what, you yeah. know, needs a little tweaking or whatever.
Yes, exactly. And so often I'll have patients be like, what should I do for my skincare? And I'll be like, well, tell me what your skin concerns are. Are you bothered by dull tone? Are you bothered by your pores? Are you bothered by dark spots? Just like examples, and have them tell me what to focus on. And then I can give product recommendations or actives or ingredient recommendations from there. So it's very individualized.
So you mentioned SPF and how that's such like an important thing when it comes to skincare, but like what else other than just the fact that people should be wearing it, like why else is it important?
Okay, yes, we know that it helps make it safer to be out in the sun so that mm-hmm. we're not getting sunburns. That's kind of the base. Everyone knows sunscreen helps prevent sunburns, but sunscreen and regular use of it is also going to help protect our skin from free radical damage, ultraviolet radiation, radiation damage from the sun. Those things lead to early signs of aging, like fine lines and wrinkles, dark spots, loss of elasticity, kind of sagging skin. And we know for a fact that ultraviolet radiation, sun exposure is the major risk for skin cancers, basal cell skin cancers, squamous cell skin cancers, and melanomas. So using sunscreen on a daily basis and making it part of your habit, you're getting the benefit of right then and there, you're reducing your risk of sunburn. Later on down the line, you're reducing your physical signs of aging and your risk of developing skin cancer. So lots of benefits kind of in the short term and the long term.
So two questions here going off of that. When you say we should get a moisturizer if possible that has SPF, like for me, and I'm super fair skinned, I'm like, oh, well, that's not enough SPF. Does the SPF number really matter? And is the SPF that's in moisturizer, is that good enough for the day? Or
it kind of depends on what your day's activities are going to look like. I find that most cosmetics, because makeup will have SPF in it sometimes, and skincare care products, so a moisturizer with SPF, they're going to have an SPF of anywhere between maybe 10 and 45 SPF. The American Academy of Dermatology really recommends at least 30 SPF for everyone and every person. But you knowing that you're fair skinned, same for me. I'm like very, very, very fair. White as a ghost, as I like to say. We know that an SPF 30 probably isn't going to cut it. And the way that SPF works, the idea is if you have an SPF of 30, it's going to take your skin about 30 times as long to burn. But that's usually in minutes. So it's still looking at 30 minutes, 60 minutes. The American Academy of Dermatology also recommends that we be reapplying if we're outside spending time, especially if we're sweating or swimming. The sunscreen should be reapplied every 40 to 80 minutes, just depending. But on a day-to-day basis, if you're just, you know, running errands, you're going to the office, you're really not spending any time outdoors aside from running from car to building, building to car, an SPF of 30 that you apply just once in the morning is going to be just fine. So it's a matter of what are your activity levels look like for the day, and then you go from there. When it comes to all the different SPFs, like I've seen SPF as low as 8 in like Hawaiian Tropic tanning oil, and then we've got SPF like 100, you would think that the 100 is way, way, way more protective than the 8. Studies have shown that the SPF factor of protection really kind of starts to level out once you hit 70. So there isn't much of a difference in protection level between the 70 and the 100. And sometimes the 100 is more expensive. And right. So you're okay doing the 70. 70, I would say, you know, if you're a fair-skinned individual, you're going to be sweating, maybe you're out on the boat fishing, that's a good choice. But for the average American, average life, SPF 30 is what the American Academy of Dermatology is recommending.
So since you just busted a myth, it reminded me of a few others. Like I have some people in my life that I'm not going to call out here, but they will know who they are, who are like, oh, it's the morning, I don't need sunscreen, or, oh, it's cloudy, I don't need sunscreen.
Okay, yes, and that is a myth, because the sun damage that we're getting is in the form of ultraviolet radiation, which it does come through cloud cover, and it does come through overcast. The UV index tends to be lower in the morning and lower in the evening because the sun is not sitting directly above us, so we're getting less of that radiation. It's still important to be wearing sunscreen. You're never going to hear me say otherwise, but you need less of it, or it's less important in the morning, but you should still make it a habit. During the hours of like 10 to 3, so 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., the UV index coming from the sun, so the ultraviolet radiation coming from the sun, is greatest. And that's where we really need to be careful. And some people like to say between 10 and 3, stay under a tree, or sometimes it's between 9 and 3, stay under a tree. The idea is seek shade when you can. Try and get out of the sun when you can. I've had some people where they actually track the UV index on their phone, because you can see that on most weather apps, and that helps them kind of get an idea of, okay, you know, should I be using my regular 30, or should I really ramp it up today and do like a 45 or a 50 SPF? It's still important in the morning, but I kind of understand where that statement came from in terms of, yes, the sun is less potent in the morning, so don't have to worry about it. Yeah, we still want to worry about it.
Right. So what about, this is another myth, another person in my life, I'm not going to call them out because I know who they are, but they're very, very tan. And I'm like, you still got to wear some block. And they're like, well, no, I don't get sunburned.
That's an awesome question, because granted, we are in the northern Minnesota and Wisconsin area here. So we have a lot of fair skinned individuals, but people who have more of an olive skin tone, or even dark skinned individuals, people of color, they can still develop skin cancer, and they will still develop signs of aging related to sun damage. Yes, they may not burn as easily because their skin naturally, luckily, makes more of the melanin. There is more protection there, but it's not a 0% kind of chance. They're still getting damaged. So they really should be wearing sunscreen. And even people with tan skin or darker skin, they can also develop darker spots, sunspots, and they may not like that. So it's okay. Yes, you may feel like you're more protected and don't have to wear sunscreen because you get a tan and you never get red, but the risk is still there.
Can you explain the long-term effects of sun exposure on the skin, aside from obviously your risk of skin cancer increasing?
So some of the more like visible effects of sun would be the increase in fine lines and wrinkles. Oftentimes people will also develop dark spots, and it can be on and really any area that is sun exposed. So the face, the ears, the scalp, the arms, the hands. People tend to really forget about their hands when it comes to protecting them from the sun. So we see a lot of dark spots on people's hands. But then also sun exposure contributes to thinning of the skin. And so as you're aging, if your skin is starting to thin out because of aging, because of sun exposure, sometimes even because of smoking, like tobacco products, your skin is going to look more dull. It's going to look kind of crepey. That's a really common buzzword. People really hate their crepey skin, and that's just kind of forever wrinkled skin. But then they're going to be more likely to get injuries to the skin. They're more likely to get cuts and bruises and skin tears. And so we're worried about the integrity of the skin at that point in time. Yes, we have a lot of visual changes related to sun exposure, cumulative sun damage to the skin. We know it's a risk for skin cancer, but a lot of people in their 60s, 70s, 80s are not enjoying the dark spots, the thinning skin, the skin tears, and those are also related to sun exposure and aging.
So you touched on this a little bit with that last answer, but how do lifestyle factors play into skin health, like diet, you know, things like that, exercise, if you're stressed? I know I always break out when I'm stressed out. So how do lifestyle factors play a role?
Kind of peripherally. So everyone's going to say, hey, healthy diet, exercise, this is all good for your body in general. Having a varied healthy diet, we're going to be more likely to get the nutrients and the minerals and the essentially like the micronutrients that are necessary for healthy skin. If you have allergies or dietary restrictions, you may not be getting the important vitamin D, vitamin B12, iron, folic acid from your diet, and that can negatively affect your skin. As far as exercise is concerned, we just know that that's good for body health in general. Keeping our body essentially like more toned will help keep our skin from getting stretched out. The more weight we put on, the more our skin kind of stretches out. And if we do end up losing that weight, then the elasticity, we don't necessarily end up snapping back. And so you can have more of that loose texture to the skin. And as far as stress management, you're right on the money when you said, I know if I'm stressed, I'm breaking out more. That's super, super common, probably related to stress increases cortisol levels. And then we have like hormonal influences. We start making more oil. Maybe we take care of our skin less when we're stressed out. So you're not removing your makeup at the end of the evening. You're forgetting to wash your makeup brushes and, you know, just kind of putting bacteria back on your skin. And so stress management, we know, can affect the skin negatively. If you're really stressed out, skin can look tired, breakouts, all the fun stuff that we like to deal with.
So what about sleep? I feel like I'm just always looking so tired. Like, I don't know how people wake up with youthful looking skin. So what role does sleep play in that?
So sleep in general, when we sleep, when we get good restful sleep, we are releasing more like serotonin and dopamine and all of these kind of good hormones that we need. And it's combating the stress hormones. So sleep provides rest. We're also getting better oxygenation to our cells during restful sleep, assuming you don't have like untreated sleep apnea. If you do, then that can affect your skin negatively. So one of the things that people find if they're not sleeping good, the way that their skin kind of looks in the morning is dehydrated, maybe poofy, like poofy under the eyes. Things are just kind of looking ick and dull. But if you're getting good sleep, you're getting that restorative effect to the skin. You're getting reduction in those stressful hormone levels, and you're getting good oxygenation to the skin and helping to fight free radicals that can damage the skin.
So let's talk about skincare products. Now I'm going to write all of these down or list them back because I want your skincare routine. That's obviously a huge thing that you have control over when it comes to your skin. So how should women choose skincare products for aging skin? And then also like what order should they go in? Because I always see all these things like you got to do the oil, then the serum, then the moisturizer. And so I want to hear from you rather than like TikTok, what would a common skincare routine look like for aging skin?
Oh, sure. So my kind of personal motto when it comes to skincare for really any age is the KISS method, K-I-S-S, which usually translates to keep it simple, stupid. But for the purposes of this podcast, why don't we say keep it simple, sister?
Stupid words. Just, too,
well, I mean, you know, I don't want to like infantilize people. So really, I think a good basic skincare is the best. When you start doing a bunch of different layers and different products, you are significantly increasing your chance of developing a contact irritant reaction. So in this instance, less is best. When you start adding a whole bunch of other things, they can react and they can actually make your skin angry. My general skincare is you do your gentle cleanser, kind of like what we talked about. And I personally really like things like CeraVe and Vanna Cream and some of the Aveeno products because they're going to be fragrance free, gentle on the skin. They just have a good track record. Then we go in with, if you have any actives or specific ingredients, maybe a serum, maybe a toner. If you have like a vitamin C serum, that's the next step because you want that to go in deeply into the skin. So we've got cleanser, we've got actives, and then we go in with the moisturizer. Moisturizer plus or minus SPF. If it doesn't have SPF in the moisturizer, then that's like a fourth step. You want to put sunscreen on after that. And then again, it just kind of is based on that person's needs and desires for their skincare. People in their teens and 20s, they maybe don't even need an active, so they can go cleanse, moisturize, plus SPF. In your 70s, maybe you want to start using a retinol. Then it would be cleanse, retinol, moisturize. So the retinol would be the active. People's skincare routines can kind of differ in the morning and in the evening. Mostly the difference is there are certain actives that we don't want to put on our skin if we're going to then be exposed to the sun. So morning is cleanse, actives that don't have any issues with sun, and then moisturize with sunscreen. Then the day has sun. And then in the evening, we've got cleanse, actives, and then most often we're going to want to choose a heavier, more emollient moisturizer because our skin really dries out in the nighttime as we sleep. We just lose a lot of water and we're asleep, so we're not hydrating, we're not putting additional water into us. So we want to do a heavier moisturizer in the evening.
If somebody's listening to this and maybe they're in their 20s, they know what's coming, their skin's going to start aging, or maybe, you know, they're my age and their skin's starting to age. What are just three simple basic like tips that you would give somebody for taking care of their skin?
Well, I still like my KISS method, you know, keep it simple. We don't want to be adding a whole bunch of products, choosing gentle things. As far as sort of preventative measures, we know that as we age, our skin starts to lose collagen and lose hyaluronic acid. So as a preventative measure, ingredients in skincare that help boost hyaluronic acid or collagen production would be a smart idea. So maybe a teenager or an early 20s, I would say maybe this is a good time to start introducing some hyaluronic acid. Okay, that's going to help deeply moisturize the skin and provide more of a protection against that loss of elasticity. And that can be in a serum. Oftentimes moisturizer actually has hyaluronic acid in there, but let's look at hyaluronic acid. Obviously sunscreen.
Yep.
You knew I was going to say that.
Yep. So you don't even have to count that one because okay. that's a given.
Okay, good, good. I appreciate it. So in your 20s and 30s, people will often start using retinol products and that can help. It improves the skin cell turnover. So you're getting new healthy skin cells coming forward faster. It also helps clean out the pores. We'll use them as acne treatments, but they are helping to maintain a nice sort of tight skin barrier. So introducing a low potency retinol would be a good idea. You know what I don't like is makeup wipes.
I've been hearing a lot about that lately, like don't use makeup wipes. And I am somebody who doesn't use them, but yeah. I feel like recently I've seen that a lot. Like, don't use them. They're bad for your skin.
Yeah. So makeup wipes typically are going to have a lot of different ingredients that are going to be more stripping to the skin. So they'll have a little bit of like an oily component. That's what helps break down makeup. That's okay. But what a lot of people aren't doing is then rinsing their skin afterwards. You're supposed to. Even if the makeup wipe says it's like a one and done, you're really supposed to be rinsing these ingredients off. But then they'll also have often like witch hazel or some sort of toning component. And that really just strips the oil out of the skin. It's drying. And again, we're not rinsing. So I'm not a huge fan of makeup wipes because they give us the incorrect view that I can just use this and then I'm done and I can go to bed. I really just say, you know, gentle cleanse because then we know we're getting the water and we're rinsing things off. So I don't love makeup wipes. I already said this before, but I don't like gritty exfoliants.
What is a good one that people could look for?
We want to look at chemical exfoliants. So there are a number of mild exfoliating acids that you can find in skincare products. So salicylic acid is one. Glycolic acid is one that I'm like a big fan of. I tend to see that that's less irritating to people's skin, less drying. So we've got the lactic acid is another one. So I like the salicylic acid. I like the glycolic acid, lactic acid. And sometimes products will say it's got AHAs and BHAs. So there's alpha hydroxy acids and beta hydroxy acids. Most of those are just fine as well because we're not physically like gritting up the skin. These are gently chemically exfoliating. They're just a little acid, getting a little bit of a peel. You're going to want to do something like that like one or two times a week. You don't want to over exfoliate because then you can actually cause more damage.
And when it comes to exfoliating, does the same thing as cleansers apply where like it doesn't have to be super expensive to be effective?
Totally. There's a number of really great like exfoliating serums or toners that are made by like Good Molecules or The Ordinary or The Inky List, which are very cost efficient brands that I like. And you can get them at Sephora, Ulta, Target, Walmart, online, and they're just real accessible. So those are the brands that I tend to kind of like turn people towards versus, you know, the more expensive options that you can find at like department stores.
Would you spend a lot of money on a moisturizer, or does the same rule kind of apply there?
Same rule kind of applies there. Of course, if you find a moisturizer, maybe you get a sample of something and you just fall in love with it. If you're willing to spend the money, that's great, but I'm not typically going to be recommending $60 moisturizers. And when it comes to recommendations, I usually start with, okay, well, do you feel like your skin is more oily or more dry? Because oily skin people, if you start throwing like a heavy cream on there, it's not going to feel great. It doesn't really sink in. The oil kind of keeps it from penetrating. So you're going to want to look at lighter moisturizers or gel moisturizers. And Neutrogena Hydro Boost is a nice one. I like that. There's a number of different options there, and it has hyaluronic acid in it. And then if a person has more dry skin, then you want to go with a heavier cream. And one of the ones that I really like is there's CeraVe. Their moisturizing cream can be used for face and body, and it's not going to be clogging pores. And you can get a nice big tub of it.
Okay, because I'm that person that spends $60 on face moisturizer because I'm like, I found one I really liked or whatever, but I might have to go back to the drawing board because, I mean, you're a professional. You know that, you know, they do the same thing as every other one.
You know, if you really like your $60 moisturizer, you don't have to change anything.
Right.
Yeah, you can find similar items or, you know, like dupes, quote unquote. But if it's working for you, you know, what's the point of changing it? I'm used to kind of giving product recommendations to patients where they don't have something that they already love, or they're ready to make a change because they're not really enjoying what they're using. And so starting kind of fresh. But if you've got something you love, I'm not going to knock it.
Right.
I've definitely loved like expensive sunscreens, right, and I've loved expensive moisturizers. I keep trying new things just so that I can continue to make good product recommendations to my patients. But if you're happy with what you're using and you don't mind the $60 price tag, that is totally cool.
So what is a question that you get asked all the time that maybe I did not ask you?
We were talking about SPF and sunscreen and sunblock, which are kind of interchangeable terms there. I often will have patients ask me like, is my sunscreen safe?
I wonder that too, because there's all these things out.
Absolutely.
You know,
there's been a ton of conversations surrounding the chemical sunscreens. And part of it is because you're not allowed to use those if you were to, say, go to Hawaii or areas because they're not necessarily reef safe and they care about their natural resources. Sunscreen is broken into two categories. We have the chemical sunscreen, and those are going to have things like oxybenzone and avobenzone, and those absorb the sun's ultraviolet rays. And then we have physical sunscreens, and those are the ones that are going to have titanium dioxide or zinc oxide. What a lot of people don't realize is with the chemical sunscreens, and I like them both, I don't have an issue with either. I say if you're going to use it, I'm just happy you're using it, so pick what you like. But with the chemical sunscreens, people don't realize that they're supposed to put it on their skin 20 to 30 minutes before sun exposure. It's not good to go right as soon as it hits your skin. You got to let it penetrate, and then you have the protection. Whereas with the physical sunscreens like the titanium dioxide and the zinc oxide, you put it on and you're good to go because the minerals are actually reflecting or deflecting the sun's rays away from your skin. So that sun is not penetrating into the skin. Like I said, I like both. I'll use chemical sunscreen. I'll use zinc or titanium based sunscreens. I will make product recommendations. If a person has real sensitive skin, I'm going to default more towards the mineral based physical sunscreens because they have less chemicals in them. And those are the ones that are also marketed towards baby. So all of the sunscreen brands that have like baby sunscreen, maybe it's in like cutesy pink packages, those are going to be physical zinc or titanium sunscreens, mineral-based sunscreens. So baby skin is more sensitive. So if you have sensitive skin, default to baby products or mineral-based sunscreens. And a lot of the sort of rumor surrounding chemical sunscreens cause skin cancer, which they don't. There's been no causal effect there, but that's what I hear my patients talk about all the time. The FDA has basically, what they've done is they recognize sunscreen as GRASE, generally recognized as safe and effective. That's the kind of stamp of approval that they'll give for sunscreens. And they're able to give the physical sunscreens, including the zinc oxide and the titanium dioxide, that GRASE, GRASE, stamp of approval. They are not able to do that yet for the chemical sunscreens because they are asking the manufacturers of the avobenzone and the oxybenzone and the other chemical products that we use in sunscreens. They are asking those manufacturers for additional data on how much of those chemicals end up inside of our body and maybe inside of our bloodstream. The FDA, the AAD, which is the American Academy of Dermatology, they still recommend both, but the FDA just can't give that stamp of GRASE, generally recognized as safe and effective, for the chemical ones. So that's, I think, where a lot of that rumor came from, that the chemical sunscreens are unsafe or, you know, we shouldn't be using them. No, I mean, I use those all the time. And if I'll put it on my skin, it's okay for you to put it on your skin. I've done the research.
And you've said too earlier in this podcast, like, nothing is worse than not wearing sunscreen.
Totally. I mean, I'm happy. If you're going to do it, I'm happy. Can I make little tweaks in terms of, hey, let's go from an SPF 15 to an SPF 30? Cool, but I'm just real happy if you're doing it. And so I will often tell patients, like, good job, I'm glad you're doing it. And I didn't have to tell you already.
Yeah. Okay, this one is a little random, but what are things you should absolutely not do if you want nice, clear skin?
The two worst things you can do for your skin are to get ultraviolet radiation through the sun or through tanning and smoke. Those are like the two major contributors to poor skin health and aging. You got to kind of meet the patient where they are in terms of what their priorities or what their concerns are. So, okay, you've got a smoker. Maybe they don't really worry so much about down the line, could this increase their risk of cardiovascular disease? But they sure as heck care about, oh my gosh, you mean this is contributing to my wrinkles? That might be really important to them. So that additional fact, that could be what changes their mind about smoking. So that's just one additional thing.
Yeah, we all want to look and feel our best.
Totally. So we really, really focused on sunscreen. But for a lot of people, they don't necessarily want to be wearing sunscreen. Maybe they don't like the feel of it on their skin, the texture. They don't like the application. So in those instances, then other sun protection measures would be things like wide brim hats. There is a type of clothing or a type of material called UPF, Universal Protection Factor clothing. You can get sun shirts, long sleeve. You can get pants. I've even seen dresses. And those are becoming more and more widely available, whereas it used to be you kind of just had to order like an $80 shirt offline. But now you can get things like that at Dick's Sporting Goods and Walmart. And often they're sort of marketed as like fishing shirts or sun shirts. But those are really great because that's a physical barrier between you and the sun. And then, of course, you know, you can do umbrellas and then just choosing shade. So we've got physical protection between you and the sun. We want to avoid tanning beds. We all know that, because that is additional UV radiation. Polarized sunglasses in particular, but most sunglasses that are purchasable these days are going to have a UV rating. They're going to have protection. And a lot of people don't think about their eyeballs, aside from the fact like, oh boy, it's sunny outside and I'm squinting, I want to wear my sunglasses. But sun exposure to the eyes over time increases the risk of cataract formation, and you can develop melanoma in your eye. It's real rare, but you can develop melanoma skin cancer in your eye. You can talk to an ophthalmologist or an eye doctor about this, but there's additional issues related to eye health and sun.
So I have one more question for you. This is just all selfish questions that because I love this topic. Water, hydration.
Yes.
The more hydrated you are, the better your skin will look, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And so the typical recommendation is that we want to be getting 64 ounces or like 8 glasses of water a day into our system. Water is constantly evaporating off of us, especially at night, like I had said before. Like, we lose a lot of water when we sleep, and that water loss in our skin is what really makes us look dehydrated and tired, and it leads to like dull tone and texture. So good hydration helps plump the skin, helps brighten the skin, and it helps just in general make it appear more youthful and healthy.
Okay, that's gonna help me because, you know, I don't drink soda or anything, but sometimes like drinking water is kind of a chore. So
yeah,
I'm gonna keep this in mind.
You know, you do technically get some water out of soda, but is the net benefit there? I don't know. I'm not a nutritionist or a dietitian.
It's probably not. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say probably not.
Yeah, you're getting something out of there, but you know, how much is it taking out too? Yeah, so moisturizing, if you think about it, should be an internal and an external situation. So you can use creams, lotions, potions to moisturize the external, but you want to be putting that moisture on the inside of your system for skin health. Yeah, but the rest of your body systems need to be hydrated.
All right. Well, I could probably talk to you for 5 hours about this topic, maybe even longer. I really enjoyed talking about skincare for women as we age. So Erin Monahan, physician assistant at Essentia Health, thank you so much for this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.